Michelle Rayner joining you. Today, in the final program in the series History Under Siege, we journey to Argentina to explore how that country is dealing with a difficult and painful memory of its 7-year military dictatorship, which began after a coup in March 1976 and saw more than 30,000 people tortured and disappeared. But the country has started dealing with this history by facing it head on. From judicial campaigns to try and bring some of the perpetrators of the state terror to trial, through to the government's official campaign of remembering. It's called, in Spanish, Nunca Más, or Never Again.
Argentina. Buenas tardes, amigos. When you went to the facultad and you had that marble with all the names of the disappeared, and it was like an emptiness.
Argentina.
The memorial process is alike to that of Germany after the Second World War.
Argentina.
In spite of all that was done in Argentina, I still feel the issue of settling account with the past cannot be finished. It's always an open question, and it does not have to do with time passing.
When the military generals in Argentina staged their stealthy coup d'etat on the night of March 26, 1976, the event might have been seen as just another example of the seemingly routine cycle in Latin American countries of political instability. But what was to transpire in Argentina over the 7-year rule of the military dictatorship was an unprecedented level of state terror and violence that's become notoriously known as the Dirty War. From the beginning, the military junta in Argentina set out to destroy all levels of political and social activism, from the traditional trade union and workers' groups to the more recent youth student movements, which had sprung up in the late 1960s and early 1970s. After the fall of the junta in 1983, human rights organisations put the number of disappeared, or possibly dead, at 30,000. Up to 300,000 Argentinians had gone into exile, and up to 500 children had been kidnapped or stolen. The wide-scale phenomenon of disappearance, whereby people were taken, detained, and possibly killed, has become one of the damning hallmarks of the Argentinian dictatorship. And the lack of resolution for many remaining family members surrounding those who've disappeared is a key factor in keeping this history alive. So today, inside the country, the struggle to understand and account for the complex story of the Dirty War continues unabated.
It helps to think why, and the role of the U.S., it was very clear also. It's very well remembered that Henry Kissinger, at the very beginning of the dictatorship, said, well, if you want to do this, please do quickly.
Patricia Valdez is the executive director of Memoria Abierta, or the Open Memory Association. It grew out of the determination by human rights groups in Argentina to preserve and document the history of the dictatorship. And it's developed a major exhibition about the Dirty War, which has toured the country. Funded by local and international aid organisations, Memoria Abierta chronicles the full gamut of this history, through the dictatorship years to the return of democracy in 1983, and the continuing struggle to put those responsible for crimes during the military regime on trial. And the association's vast exhibition has functioned as a form of catharsis for many Argentinians who've seen it.
In that case, this is about the previous days of the coup d'etat. It tried to transmit that the feelings and the thoughts at the time of the coup d'etat are not the same all over the population. For example, this is a very, low-class people. Their son was captured by the army. And they have a conversation between them saying that she said, I was very naive at that time because I think that, oh, it's good because the army take the power right now, and they will do the things in a proper way.
Como encuentran papeles, no puedo decir que yo no soy militante. No puedo decir, no, yo iba caminando por acá, soy inocente, no sé, yo no me dedico a nada.
It includes hundreds of oral testimonies, films and press cuttings, plus the gruesome disclosure of the many clandestine centres set up by the junta where detainees were tortured and killed. Patricia Valdez walked me through just a small part of the exhibition inside the Casa de Cultura in downtown Buenos Aires.
One thing that is very, very fixed in the discourse is that things began in 1976 when the coup d'etat happens, but it's not the reality. The strong mobilization and the strong struggle from the work class and the popular sectors and the students, and there are not political parties, there are political groups. And it's very important to distinguish, but there are other very, very wide and big portion of the population that are engaged in a different ways in some protests, and there are a lot of Catholic grassroots groups.
So Patrick, we're standing here in your living room and there's a memorial here to your colleagues who disappeared?
Yes. We've been kind of gathering these photographs, and in the center is Mauricio Silva on the 14th of June. He was taken. Carlo Bustos, who is a Capuchin friar, working in shanty towns, we worked together. And Nelly Ruggier and this Pablo Gazzari, a priest from the city of Buenos Aires.
And perhaps you could just translate the Spanish little text here.
No one loves more than he or she who gives their life for their friends.
Patrick Rice is a former Catholic priest who came to work with the poor in Argentina in 1972. One of the characteristics of the military junta during the Dirty War was the detention and in some cases the killing of members of religious orders working in shanty towns and villages across Argentina. In October 1976, 8 months after the coup, Patrick Rice and a colleague, Fatima Cabrillo, got their very own first-hand taste of the dictatorship.
We became targeted. So on the 11th October, leaving this community, we were stopped by these individuals in a small jeep, and they fired some shots at us, and then we were taken to the local police station where we were held there. And that night they said that the military would come. They already had beaten us quite a lot in the police station, would take us to a center where they said to me, you will realize now that the Romans knew nothing about torture in comparison with the Argentinians. And I was put into the boot of a Falcon car, which still are amazingly coming around the city. You'll see them. And we were taken, and Fatima was put in the back seat, and we were taken to the secret detention center. Then we were beaten. I was beaten, separated. And then sometime afterwards, maybe 12 or 15 hours after, we were taken out, hooded, of course, and I was with electricity. They wanted to get names of people in the neighborhood. And then finally they stopped me and they continued with Fatima. And this was going on, you know, with the terrible screaming and the noise. Sometimes I still have a problem with heavy traffic. Yeah. I still remember one when they had me tied to what they call a parija, which is a kind of a bed where then there's the electricity and they had the music. And one knows at that time that a song is about 3 minutes. To me, it seemed to be about three hours, yeah. You know, that sense. And certainly, like, day and night, one loses that sense. It always seems to be either daylight or you know, one doesn't... So finally, they took me out. One guy said, we accuse you, well, you have been arrested. And... this was three days afterwards. Then I realized that the case had just been published in the newspaper. There were a few questions came together. The General Assembly of the United Nations was going on and people were asking about me. So we were brought to the local police station, and two or three days afterwards I was brought out to an interview with the ambassador. And it was funny because only recently I met the Justin Harmon, who was secretary to the ambassador, Wilfred Lennon, at that time. And it was interesting because I hadn't met him since for all of these years, almost 30 years, and he was telling me of how I looked at that time. I'd never realized I had, he said I had a lot of cigarette burns. I didn't realize.
Perhaps a specific sentence from the generals in the power, Iberico St. James. St. James say, first we kill the subversive, later we kill the sympathizers of subversives, and if it's necessary later on, we kill anyone to want to express or voice or support for the other people. Give you a clear picture about what it was the purpose of the military government in Argentina.
In 1978, Jorge Bagnini was living in Argentina's second major city, Córdoba, married with a small child and another one on the way. Jorge was an actor with a troupe whose work was openly political. So early one morning, he received a surprise visit from the military security police.
When I opened the door, they put the gun in my head and it was over. They put the gun in my head and said, you have to come in with us. We don't plan to give you any explanation. I tried to say, I need to talk to the lawyer. They say, no, you can't. They push me out, put me in a car. And I arrive, they put me inside in one of the room, and they start to, I was handcuffed. And they started to beating me seriously in my head with the buttons and everything, and they put an electricity in my hands and all of that stuff. That night, just for a start, that was perhaps the welcome to the dark side of Argentina. All of this period, I was we call NN, which means not identified body or person. My family, my mom, my partner knocked the door everywhere, and the answer was, he is not here.
So in a sense, you were a disappeared person.
I was kind of disappeared. After Córdoba, the UP1, they transferred me to Unit 9, La Plata, in Buenos Aires. After 6 months, they finally admit I was in jail, I was there, and it was the first time I had the chance to see my family. Mm. It was just a distance in between 2 meters each other. Mm. I didn't have the chance to touch my kids. They didn't accept like that. Obviously, they didn't accept to touch my partner. And I stayed there for 2 years. And the German embassy and the German government applied for my freedom to live in Germany, which is a clear indication I was not involved in any terrorist organization at all. In 1981, they say, you are free. Which means all of this journey, which I mentioned to you, without trial, never I see anybody in the court, even in the military court, nothing at all. Just one day I say, go away, go, you are free. To try to back again to the society, restore my life, restore the pieces of the family I lost. If that's the price to be sometime in the opposition, and this is the price to many Argentinian, Latin American, and other people in the rest of the world.
Pa'lante corazón, pa'lante siempre, aunque te quieran calcinar el ángel, aunque te asalten ganas de incendiar la mañana, reventando de gritos contra el aire.
Well, this is in a very close connection with this map.
There's a big rectangle map on the ground here at Memoria Abierta.
The purpose of this map is to show how many places throughout the country they establish as a clandestine center of detentions.
Like so a concentration camp.
There are ordinary buildings that receive the use to put kidnapped people inside. In many cases, or in the majority of the cases, there are a parallel life in these buildings. So we have identified 622 places.
All the red dots in
Argentina.
We are trying to reproduce the walk that the disappear did. The gate door was the door that you use there, and the cars go to the...
Este hecho tenebroso y macabro de tantos campos de la concentración como fue la ESMA.
Former Argentinian President Néstor Kirchner, in 2004, standing on the site of possibly the most notorious of the 622 detention centres which secretly operated during the dictatorship. Kirchner's made the announcement that ESMA, a former naval military college where up to 5,000 people were detained and tortured, was going to be turned into a memorial. Located in the centre of Buenos Aires, the gracious lines of ESMA's 19th century building belies the violence which took place inside it and the misery now associated with it. The testimonies of the 100 known survivors of detention in ESMA are an integral part of what is being termed not a museum, but rather a space for memory and the promotion of human rights.
So we were talking about describing the exterior.
Yeah, this was the school and where the people from the Navy studied. And I told you that the guardians from the clandestine centre were...
Samantha Casarito is a curator at ESMA, where she's helping to create guided tours of the site.
It's a very cold building, isn't it? Cold.
Yeah, absolutely. And the kidnapped people were with the hood. And also they have, you know... chains in the hands and in the feet also.
Yeah, they were manacled.
So it was very hard for them to walk up and down because they have like 20 centimeter chain. And the first torture room were here. There were a very strong music in this place. Not only to hide the screamings, but also it's another kind of torture because sometimes they put the same song all day long.
Repeat.
On the radio or a football match or a goal all day long, so you can understand the times, you know, you lose
track of time.
Yeah, track of time. And also doctors stayed here. They were not to take care of the victims, they were only to say that if you can continue torture or not, but also it will use like a room to have to delivery. We're going to the maternity.
On one floor of the detention centre, at any time, there were people being beaten and tortured, while just a flight of stairs above, babies were being delivered into the small, crudely set up labour wards. In one of the most venal acts of the dictatorship, up to 500 women gave birth while in detention and then had their babies taken from them and farmed out, under a new name and identity, to members of the security forces in the Argentine military.
This was the major maternity ward for all of the captives.
Yeah, there were some doctors working here. They forgot all the Hippocratic...
Hippocratic oath, they forgot about it. Yeah.
And also we have testimony of some women who helped other women to deliver. That is very important because with all this information we can rebuild the story of the baby boys or the baby girls who were born here. And that is very important because they continue to be disappeared.
Argentina.
Consulados, embajadas, ministerios, iglesias. Madres de la plaza, el pueblo las abraza. Madres de la plaza, el pueblo las abraza.
Compañeras, buenas noches. Nuevamente.
The sounds of a celebratory concert marking the 30th anniversary of the group who've become the most memorable and enduring symbol of the struggle against the dictatorship, the Mothers of the Plaza de Mayo.
Para estas madres, hoy y siempre, gracias compañeros, muchas gracias.
Hace 30 años.
In 1977, a group of mothers of the disappeared gathered on a Thursday in downtown Buenos Aires' May Square and took the circular walk around the plaza's central obelisk. And despite bullying and intimidation during the 7 years of the military junta, including the murders of three of the founding women, the mothers, defiant, continued to meet and take their weekly circular walk. And soon images of them began to flash around the world media. In the 30th anniversary year of the group's formation, some of the mothers spoke of their experiences.
Empezaron a llevarse a nuestros hijos. Salimos de la cocina a la calle a buscarlos.
They started to take away our children, and we went out from our kitchens into the street to look for them. We'd go out every day carrying clean clothes for them to change into. It never occurred to us that we'd never see them again. And we began to recognize each other. And we'd ask each other, who are you missing?
When we realized we weren't going to get any information, one mother said, well, let's get together and then maybe we'll get an answer. So we went to the plaza. There were 14 of us and we were full of hope because there seemed to be so many of us.
Neither forget nor forgive, because if people forget, then history will repeat itself. And the mothers don't forgive, because we will never accept that they are dead. That's why the plaza is so important to us.
Por eso la plaza tiene tanta importancia como para nosotras.
Para mí la plaza representa toda la lucha.
For me, the plaza represents all our struggle, and the 30,000 disappeared. And so how could I retire? I am one of the founders. I'm not going to leave my fight. It's never even crossed my mind.
Yo no voy a dejar mi lucha. Nunca se me cruzó por la cabeza.
Compañero de noche y penumbra, estentóreo grito del silencio.
Lo que sucedió fue que, lo que me cuenta mi madre es que él un día se fue a trabajar y trabajaba en la Casa Rosada.
What my mother told me was that when my father went to work, he was supposed to come back at 6, but it was 15 minutes past 6 and he never arrived. So we picked our things and we left the house because we knew about the situation. And a military man took over our house and he kept it and he lives there. And he got all our photos, our memories, our clothes, except a little bag with my baby clothes.
Excepto un bolso con mi ropa de bebé.
Maria Guafira was 6 months old in 1977 when her father was kidnapped and later murdered by security forces in Argentina. Her mother took Maria and fled into exile in Brazil for several years. Today, Maria Guafira is a visual artist and her home studio in Buenos Aires is full of her paintings, many of which depict families, father figures, or a solitary tiny child.
Estuve en la agrupación Hijos y sí.
I belong to the disappeared children's group, and I know a lot of them. And many of my paintings are based on the stories of other children of the disappeared. For example, I have a friend of mine whose name is Diego, whose father was a Montonero leader, and he was shot dead. In his own house, the military men entered his house and they shot both parents, his mother and his father. And in front of him, when he was only 3 years old, well, with his sister, but she was a year and a half, so she cannot remember, luckily.
We're sitting here surrounded by your paintings, Maria, your art, and
perhaps you could describe some of the reoccurring themes in your paintings.
Bueno, mis cuadros. This painting, the title is The Father That I Didn't Have. And it's an expression of my wish. And every picture is related to my life, and I base a lot of my paintings on my photographs.
Photographs of your family?
Sí.
Many people know about the mothers of the plaza, and many people know, of course, of those who were lost. Not so many around the world know of the loss for the children who followed. Is it possible to think about how it's affected your generation?
Tengo muchos amigos, hijos desaparecidos o implicados en el tema.
Well, the people from my generation are not all the same. I have friends, a lot of friends, whose parents disappeared, but there are people who know very little about what happened during the 70s. And, well, you know that society needs a long time to analyze and understand this. I have all the information, and I have the genetic information in my blood, so there isn't much to explain.
We were orphans in many ways. I mean, the generation that preceded us is disappeared. So there was something in this chain of memory that was cut. And for me, it's terrible because stories about the past are essential. I mean, I love the stories my father told me about Italy under Mussolini. And for me, history came as a story. But you need someone to tell the story. And that was something we lost with the disappearance. There is only blanks.